You gotta serve somebody, says musician Bob Dylan. We have a clear example of a servant in today's gospel reading, the rich man's manager. The way the parable is set up, the manager is supposed to be taking care of the man's property. But instead of doing so, it seems that he has been mismanaging it. The time comes for the manager to produce the records of how things are going, and he knows he could be in big trouble. Now, this parable is often named the parable of the dishonest manager. Perhaps that is so, but what I also see here is a merciful manager. Yes, on the one hand, the manager has been less than responsible with the rich man's property, but on the other hand, he must have been seen as quite a good friend to the debtors. Imagine, someone slashes your mortgage in half or cuts your car payment by 20%. You have found yourself a new friend indeed. First, let's think for a moment about what it might have meant for a person in the first century to forgive debts like we see the manager do in this story. The reality is that most peasants in this era lived their entire lives under crushing debts. There was simply no escaping it. These debts weren't monetary in the way we might imagine debts today. They were agricultural, debts of wine, debts of wheat, debts of olive oil, as we heard in today's parable. Furthermore, the way property rights were structured, very few of the people working the land owned their own land. Rather, they would have been tenant farmers, renting out a bit of land on which to farm. Sure, they grew a bit of food to feed their families, but the rent that they had to pay for the privilege of doing so far outweighed any proceeds from selling the products. Thus, this ceaseless cycle of debt enslaved them. So in light of this, think about our parable again. One of the most oppressive aspects of a tenant farmer's existence at this point in time, their debt, was being cut in half or reduced by a large amount. It was an act of liberation and joy. Sure, the manager may have been unjust. It certainly sounds like that to my ears in a first reading. I can imagine myself being enraged if one of my employees essentially squandered money that was owed to me. Never mind that it might have been absolutely liberating for the debtors. I would still be really upset. Yet by understanding the social situation in which this parable was heard and understood, new light can be shed on the parable. And this is what this story is, after all. A parable, a literary device that helps us to better understand a deeper truth. Instead of only seeing the manager's dishonesty, we can also see mercy, love, forgiveness. We can start to see this parable perhaps as a parallel metaphor of God's love, God's mercy, God's grace in Jesus Christ. The debtors did not do anything in particular to deserve this radical reduction in their debts. Similarly, many of us, myself included, might not think that we have done anything in particular to earn God's love, mercy, and grace. Yet here we are, being loved beyond all measure and having been given the gift of forgiveness in Jesus Christ. You might be thinking, okay, Derek, all this debt, forgiveness, and mercy is great, but we still have the issue of the manager doing a lousy job. And he is, I agree. We have a loose end here, and there are so many things we could learn by thinking about it. But let's not get distracted. Jesus' parables frequently have aspects that leave us wondering and scratching our heads. They're not meant to be completely airtight arguments for something. As I said, parables are literary devices that help us understand deeper truths. When we think about the background of Hebrew scriptures that this parable would have been heard against, We can understand the concept of debt forgiveness as the people hearing the parable might have heard it themselves. The people hearing this parable likely would have recognized its connection to their own sacred texts, what we now call the Old Testament. The forgiveness of debts by the manager also evokes earlier biblical imagery of debt forgiveness and of the concept of the Jubilee year. You see, in ancient Israel, according to the book of Leviticus, going way back in our Bibles, every 50th year, slaves and prisoners would be freed and debts would be forgiven. This was not merely a nice idea, but allegedly a very real part of life in ancient Israel. So keeping the same ideas in mind, let us turn to our Old Testament reading today. The prophet Amos is decrying injustices in his own day, some 8 centuries before Christ. Instead of viewing the Sabbath as a gift of a rhythm of rest and recovery for humans, for animals, and for the earth, some people in Amos's day apparently found it to be quite an inconvenience. Amos decries the merchants who cannot wait until the Sabbath is over in order to sell their products. On this note, Amos would probably direct his fury at people like me, who similarly find it quite inconvenient to find shops closed on Sunday or on a holiday. I worry about my own convenience more than the well-being of workers taking a rest. Furthermore, when the merchants in our story from Amos do go to sell their products, they engage in dishonest business practices with inaccurate scales and by selling the sweepings of the wheat for the same price as the quality grains. One might imagine that these folks were not in favor of the mercies of the Jubilee year either. Just as in the gospel lesson, then, Amos's critique doesn't appear to be so much about money as it is about how people are being valued, or rather, not being valued. If individuals are valuing money above people, something is surely out of balance in society. Jesus, though, points to a better way. Jesus points to a way where everyone has what they need, for today and for tomorrow. The verse, "Give us today our daily bread," from the Lord's Prayer, might actually be better translated, "Give us today our bread for tomorrow." In other words, give us today what we need to make tomorrow possible. Jesus points us to the true and enduring riches of things heavenly, things far different from the things we are accustomed to here on earth that decay and pass away. So I will close as I began with our theologian of the day, Bob Dylan. Might like to wear cotton, might like to wear silk, might like to drink whiskey, might like to drink milk. You might like to eat caviar, you might like to eat bread. You may be sleeping on the floor or sleeping in a king-sized bed. But you're going to have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're going to have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. May we always know who we serve, the one who created us, redeemed us, and loves us fiercely. Amen.